Welcome to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty, author of C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, a companion and study guide to the Screwtape Letters. Today's show focuses on The Last Battle, the final story in the Narnia series. I'm covering it as part of a new occasional feature I call Why Read Lewis. I accidentally started this feature in 2016 when I first celebrated the 75th anniversary of the publication of the Screwtape Letters, initially appearing in weekly installments. For that show, I had a variety of people comment on the classic work. That led me to consider doing the same for all of Lewis's books. This, as you can imagine, is a very large task that will take many years. So I'm releasing a show whenever I have between 3 to 5 individuals recorded commenting on a particular book. Some will be well-known scholars who speak on Lewis. Others are individuals respected in various fields who have a love for C.S. Lewis and a great working knowledge of his work to warrant being on the show. As noted, today I'm focusing on The Last Battle. It's a work that hardly needs an introduction, but allow me to give some context to either remind you or inform you who are less familiar with it. The Last Battle is, of course, part of the Chronicles of Narnia. It is the final story in this series that tells how what we know as Narnia ends. It was first published in 1956, the same year as another fictional work, Till We Have Faces. That same year, The Last Battle won the annual Carnegie Medal from the Library Association, recognizing the year's best children's book by a British subject. The first paperback edition of The Last Battle came out in January 1964, which is after Lewis's death. If you've heard any of my other shows that are like this, then you know that I will wait till the end to give you more details about who the various speakers are. So, all that's left for me to do is to let you know who they are and the fact that I'll just be sharing their names before they speak. While many other people are more than qualified to speak on The Last Battle, for today's show, I have these 5 individuals: Kristen Ditchfield Lazo, Dennis Beetz, Gina D'Alfonso, Dr. Holly Ordway, and Dr. Michael Ward. Up first is Kristen Ditchfield Lazo.
You know, I've heard from a lot of people that they couldn't get through The Last Battle, or they didn't want to read The Last Battle because they were afraid of what they would find, of how dark it is, or how sad it is. Maybe they read a few chapters and thought, I just can't keep going on. But, you know, it's such a profound and meaningful work, so rich with spiritual lessons that are, so very timely for us today. And if you don't read to the end, you miss the glorious conclusion that is a beginning, a new beginning for the people of Narnia and for us. And I just, I think of how many times the book has come back to me as a really powerful example for us as we find ourselves in a dark time. You know, I was talking to my little brother. We were talking Narnia, talking about life and Narnia. And he pointed out something that has just really stuck with me. You know, in The Last Battle, we've got Tyrion praying for Aslan to send the children to come and save Narnia, save the world once again, come and restore Narnia to its former glory. And, you know, lo and behold, Jill and Eustace appear, and it seems like his prayer has been answered. But things keep going from bad to worse, and it gets more and more discouraging and more dark. And he doesn't understand what's going on. And I think about that in our own world today. You know, so many of us are trying to fight the good fight, and we don't understand why it's so dark, why we're not making any progress. Where is Aslan? When is he going to come and restore our country, restore our culture, restore our world to its former glory? You know, when is he going to answer our prayers to make the world a better place? You know, as it turns out in The Last Battle, Aslan isn't coming to restore everything the way he has in the past. They're in a different age. They're in a different time. And what Jill and Eustace and Tyrion find is that there's no restoring Narnia to its former glory this time. What they need to do is take a stand. They need to rescue those that they can and then be found faithful to the end. That's what they're called to do, is to be a faithful witnesses to the end. And I think about that so many times in our life, in our world today. Some of us are fighting battles we can't win, and we're so frustrated that we aren't winning, but we aren't called to win these battles. We're called to take a stand. We're called to fight a good fight and be found faithful to the end. And then Aslan is going to come, but this time it will be for all time. As in the last battle, he's going to restore Narnia, not by just making everything all right, but by destroying it and recreating a new Narnia, a new heavens and a new earth. And I think that for many of us, that perspective is so profound. We just need to know what part of the story we're in. That was the point that my brother made. We don't realize which story we're in sometimes, or we don't know what part of the story we're in. And as we look at our lives, if we can remember that for many of us in this battle or that battle, or maybe in the whole battle that we face, we don't need to get discouraged because Aslan isn't coming and immediately answering all of our prayers. We need to keep fighting the good fight and make our stand, and be found faithful. It's not about winning, it's about being found faithful and knowing that he is coming, but maybe in a different way than we expected. Maybe this is the time that he will return, the Lord Jesus will return in power and glory and destroy the old world, the old earth in its decaying state, and recreate it, our new heavens and our new earth. That's what we have to look forward to. And I think that helps with discouragement. I know it does for me, in political arena, in the social arena, in the cultural arena, in the battles that we face, to keep a perspective, on the eternal glory that awaits, on Aslan's ultimate return, Jesus his ultimate return once and for all to set things to right forever and ever. Amen. And that's been such a blessing to me, such a profound lesson. And I encourage everyone I know to read The Last Battle. Yes, go back and read Narnia as a grown-up and get so much more out of it. And then, yes, read all the way to the end and read The Last Battle and find the comfort and the encouragement and the inspiration there that will bless and enrich your life.
Dennis speaks.
Whenever anyone asks me which of the Chronicles of Narnia is my favorite, I always answer by saying that it's whichever one I happen to be reading at the moment, which is pretty much true. But if somebody really pushed me to pick just one, I'm not sure, but I think it might just be The Last Battle. It is the story not only of the end of all the adventures of children from our world in Narnia, but the story of the end of Narnia itself. It's an apocalyptic book, but like so much of Lewis's work, it is not told on a grand stage. It's told through the experiences of individual characters. I believe that Lewis is primarily a spiritual theologian. Spiritual theology is a loose, vague kind of term that lacks the solid feel of apologetics or systematic theology or any number of the other specialties that people might claim or think of themselves or Lewis being. It's a more general term, and as such, it is almost incomprehensible to the modern way of thinking, which looks for objectivity and specificity. Spiritual theology is more inductive. It's more intuitive. In fact, I would say that spiritual theology really has no specific and unique content at all. Rather, it would be all of theology seen from the perspective of the formation of individual souls, the salvation or damnation of individuals. If you read Lewis's work carefully, you will see that most of it is written from this perspective, and The Last Battle is no exception. From Tyrion the king to Shift the ape to Puzzle the donkey, and in fact all of the dozens of characters you see in this story, each one makes choices, and those choices shape the condition of his or her heart, and that in turn shapes not Aslan's response to them when they meet, but their response to Aslan. In a story reminiscent of the Book of Revelation, we learn how the Narnians are tricked into surrendering their land to their age-old enemy, the Calormenes, without a struggle, and how the king captured and bound in desperation, prays for aid and receives it in the form of two of the children who have been to Narnia in the past, and how together they launch an assault designed to take Narnia back. But it's not the early or the middle stages of the book that make it so wonderful. It is the end. I believe it is the purest analogy of heaven in all of Lewis's writings. I don't know how to say what happens in these final chapters without, to some degree, giving away what should be left to discover for those who haven't yet read the book. But I can say, I think, that as Narnia comes to a very poignant end, and the High King Peter literally closes the door on that world, he and everyone with it gradually come to understand that they're in the foothills of heaven, and that all worlds as we know them, Narnia, our own world, all worlds as we know them in this life, are only shadows of real worlds. And that the further up the mountain of Aslan's own country they ascend, the more real everything becomes, until in the end, as Lewis writes, the things that began to happen after that were so great and beautiful I cannot write them. All this life in this world and all their adventures in Narnia had only been the cover and the title page. Now at last, they were beginning chapter one of the great story, which no one on earth has read, which goes on forever, in which every chapter is better than the one before.
Gina D'Alfonso.
The Last Battle is my favorite Narnian novel. And first and foremost, I think that's because of the beautiful and powerful imagery of it. To begin with, I think it has the most beautiful portrayal of heaven in its last section that I've ever seen anywhere. And that's saying quite a lot, because there have been some wonderful portrayals of heaven, Dante's, for instance, Lewis's own portrayal in The Great Divorce, which is more narrative, whereas The Last Battle is more of a poetic description. But it's The Last Battle's description of heaven that I just have a soft spot for, that will probably never go away. It makes you think, yes, this is exactly what I think my subconscious always said that heaven was like, but I never could put it into words. There's something there that you recognize, and yet there's more than you could have imagined. So it's just something that I love to come back to and think about and dream about, and just really one of the most beautiful passages perhaps in all of literature. But it's not just the depiction of heaven. There is such great and powerful imagery all through the book. Another part that I'd like to just touch on is the dwarfs who think that they're bound in a dark stable when they're really sitting out in the light in the meadow. I won't get too deeply into that description, but it's one that just stays in my mind. And sometimes, in the most unlikely situations, I'll find myself coming back to it, because it just hits home as a description of the way that all of us have such huge blind spots. And all of us see what we want to see, or maybe not even that. We see what our minds, our discipline, our habits have conditioned us to see. And it's quite scary when you think about it, but there's so much wisdom here and such a potent reminder that if we do have blind spots, and we all do, at least we can try to know that and try to be humble and try to acknowledge and believe that there's more sometimes than what we see. And that is a very humbling reminder, and so one that I try to hold tight to. As for the rest of the story, the broader story, I've been having a bit of an argument with a coworker about The Last Battle and the fact that Lewis does not bring the story back around. He doesn't bring the White Witch back. He doesn't have it be like a final showdown between the Narnians and the witch, which so many other storytellers would have done. And my colleague argues that Lewis should have done in order to bring the story full circle and make the cycle complete. And I see his point, but I sort of think that what we have here with the ape and the donkey serving to bring about the apocalypse instead of the witch, I sort of think that's fitting and wise in its own way, because it sort of strips away our apocalyptic expectations, if you will. And it shows us in the end just how weak and pathetic the devil really is in comparison to what God is and what God does. Somehow that just works for me. Again, it's a reminder of some things that we don't always remember, that we need to remember, that sometimes the evil we think is so powerful is maybe not really as powerful as we think it is, or as powerful as it appears to be. So I kind of like that he ended the story this way. One other thing I want to touch on that I think is a great misunderstanding that so many people make about the last battle, and it's so often flung in Lewis's face, the fate of Susan. And even saying the fate of Susan, I'm sort of mischaracterizing it a little, because we don't learn her final fate. We find she's no longer a friend of Narnia. We find that she's all caught up with silliness, with parties, with lipstick and nylons, I think is the famous or infamous phrase. And she has sort of put Narnia away from her as a childish imagination. And Lewis doesn't deserve, I think, the feminist criticism that he gets, saying that, you know, any girl who wants to grow up is being condemned here. That's just the thing. Susan doesn't really want to grow up. She wants something different. She doesn't want maturity. She wants frivolity. She wants all of her being to be concentrated in these things that do not last. And that's what Lewis was really about in the end, pointing us towards the permanent things and away from the silly and frivolous things. And again, as I said, we don't learn the final fate of Susan. She had plenty of time to repent and become a friend of Narnia again. And I always like to think and hope that she did, because these characters do become very real to us, and we like to hope for the best for them. But in the end, I think The Last Battle is a book about hope, and so that would really be fitting.
Dr. Holly Ordway.
Well, The Last Battle is obviously part of the Chronicles of Narnia, which I enjoyed as a girl. And it's a bit of an unusual children's book because all the characters die, which is really quite astonishing for a children's book. One of the things I think, though, that's so interesting and so moving about The Last Battle is the way that Lewis handles this. And this is something that I appreciate much more now that I've read Michael Ward's Planet Narnia. And I can appreciate the saturnine quality of The Last Battle, with both this emphasis on death as Narnia is destroyed, but also on wisdom and the gaining of a deeper insight. And I think the thing that most strikes me in terms of that wisdom and that deeper insight is the picture that Lewis gives us of heaven in The Last Battle. This is a really beautiful picture as the characters, the children go further up and further in into the real Narnia. And he allows us sort of entrance into it, and we're able to experience it, to feel it, and to really have a concrete sense of heaven, not as this vague, spiritually wishy-washy, our spirits are somewhere in heaven kind of thing, which frankly isn't a particularly appealing vision, and it's certainly not the Christian vision, but heaven as the new heavens and the new earth, when we will have resurrected bodies, when we will have a renewed creation, and how glorious that will be. And that's what we see in this renewed Narnia in The Last Battle. So it's really quite daring, I think, what Lewis has done, but it's really moving, and I think very, very effective. Another interesting point about this vision of heaven in The Last Battle is that it's so frequently misunderstood, and in particular, it's misunderstood about what happens to the character of Susan, who is not amongst the characters who enter into this heaven, Narnia heaven, at the end of the book. And all too often, people think that somehow Lewis has sent Susan to hell. She's been excluded from Narnia. She's been excluded from heaven because, you know, she has an interest in boys and lipstick and nylons, and somehow this makes him misogynist, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's just all a really bad reading of the text, because he doesn't say anything of that sort. And in fact, when you read the episode with Susan Wrightley, it's really quite insightful and hopeful. Insightful in that Lewis shows us the fact that we can wander away from our love of the Lord. Here's Susan, who knew Aslan, who was present with them. She was a queen in Narnia. And yet she gets distracted. And I don't think that Lewis is suggesting there's anything wrong with the things that she's interested in. The problem is that she's putting them ahead of Jesus in her world, of Aslan. She's making them an end in itself. And in that way, she's actually become childish. She has not remained childlike. She's become childish. And it's that turning away that's the problem. So in fact, at that point, she seems to have turned away from Aslan. So it's really quite hopeful, the fact that in the story, she doesn't appear in Narnia with the rest of them. She doesn't die because she isn't ready. She has not reached the point of saying yes again to Jesus, to Aslan in the story. So I think that's an important point. He leaves the story of Susan deliberately open-ended. She's not one of the characters who dies. And so her story has yet to end. And I think this could be a little bit, in a sense, unsettling maybe for the reader, because, well, it underscores the fact that we could be like Susan. And maybe that's a little bit hard sometimes to think about. So I think it's a complex story. And that leads me to the last thing I would really want to say about The Last Battle, which holds true for the Chronicles of Narnia as a whole, which is that they're brilliant in no small part because they're equally good for children and for adults, readable and enjoyable. And deeply meaningful for young readers, of which I was one, but also with layers and layers of meaning for adult readers. So we can keep returning to them. And that's a great sign of the quality of these books.
Dr. Michael Ward.
There are two main things I would say about The Last Battle. One has to do with what Lewis says about the Chronicles of Narnia in general being about Christ. All the Narnia series is about Christ, he says. So how is The Last Battle about Christ? And secondly, I would want to say something about my belief that the Narnia Chronicles are structured according to the symbolism of the seven heavens, which I've written about in my book Planet Narnia. So first of all, Christ. How is The Last Battle about Christ? Lewis says the whole Narnia series is about Christ, but in The Last Battle, his Christ character of Aslan doesn't show up at all for the first three quarters of the book or so. He's absent. He's nowhere to be seen. In fact, insofar as he is discernible, he's said to have changed so that he's now in favor of putting the talking beasts under the yoke and felling the talking trees. And he's visible only at night when he comes out of this stable lit by a bonfire. And it's all frightening and cold and dark and mysterious. And his name is no longer Aslan, but now Tashlan. It's all very scary, very apocalyptic. And indeed, of course, what Lewis is trying to depict here is not actually Christ, but the Antichrist. The deceiver who would deceive the very elect as per the apocalyptic parts of the Bible. So where is the real Christ? That's the mysterious thing about The Last Battle. And I think what Lewis is trying to do here is to show us an aspect of Christ's own nature, but in a very indirect and implicit kind of fashion. Where I would suggest people look for that is in that episode when King Tyrion, the last of the kings of Narnia, is bound to the tree. We might miss the connection here with the cross of Christ, because Tyrion is bound with his hands by his side. He's not attached to the tree in a cruciform position. But if you look at the way Lewis talks about this passage, there are lots of little echoes of Calvary. You know, the darkness, the cold, the way that the animals come and tend him, with an echo there of Psalm 22, and they put up a little sponge to his lips, just as the sponge of vinegar is put up to Jesus' lips on the hyssop stick. But most of all, I would want to draw attention to Tyrion's desperate prayer that he cries out in the darkness. He says, "Aslan, Aslan, Aslan, come and help us now." But the darkness and the cold and the quietness went on just the same. And I think that's Lewis's version of Jesus' own cry from the cross. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Which we find in both Matthew's Gospel and Mark's. And that cry of dereliction, as it's called, is the one verse from the scripture that you find in Lewis's work more often than any other, I think. I've counted over 20 appearances of that cry from the cross in Lewis's writings, and it's all over his work, from his diary, his poetry, his fiction, his apologetics, his journalism, his literary criticism, his letter writing, and so on and so forth. And he was even interested in this verse before he became a Christian. There are two appearances, you know, before he's even a Christian. So I think that's what we are meant to hear echoing in Tyrion's cry from the tree. He calls out and nothing happens, just like Jesus calls out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Christ feels abandoned. Where is God, the Father, to Jesus himself at this moment of dereliction? But in spite of that desolation that Tyrion experiences, he maintains his faith. He persists with his prayer and he goes on and says, let me be killed. I ask nothing for myself, but come and save all Narnia. And still there was no change in the night or the wood, but there began to be a kind of change inside Tyrion. Without knowing why, he began to feel a faint hope and he felt somehow stronger. So I think that's an indication that although Aslan appears to be absent, he's not actually absent. He is strengthening Tyrion from within somehow. This faint hope is growing in him. He can't explain it, he can't account for it, but he felt somehow stronger. Just as Jesus on the cross set his face like flint and despised the cross, enduring the shame for the joy that was set before him. And he goes through with his sacrifice for the sake of the salvation of the world, even though he can't feel any sensible consolation from his heavenly Father. So I think this is how we are to find Aslan present in the first three quarters of the last battle. He's present to those with the eye of faith. They can't see him externally. He's not showing up in person, but they've got to dig deep into their own belief, into their own faith, and they will find Aslan they will see him with the eyes of their heart, so to speak. It's a great test of faith. And this is where I would segue into the second point I want to make about Saturn and the way that I believe the last battle is built out of the imagery of the last of the seven heavens of the medieval cosmos, which Lewis described as spiritual symbols of permanent value. Last Battle, I believe, is Lewis's Saturn book. And Saturn was the worst planet, according to medieval thinking. It brought about death and disaster, pestilence, treachery, all ill luck in general. And of course, we see all that darkness and disaster throughout. But one good thing that the Saturnine influence was supposed to bring about was this very gift of contemplation, the ability to see beyond surface realities and to perceive with a wise, penetrative, godly insight into the heart of reality, which is precisely what Tyrion shows. He becomes a true child of Saturn. He gets that one good thing that Saturn has to offer, the gift of contemplation, when he finds Aslan deep within his own heart and holds on to him despite, you know, all these terrible occurrences which are coming to destroy his kingdom. So those are some of the reasons why I think The Last Battle is a Saturnine book, partly because of the darkness, but much more importantly because of the gift of contemplation And there's one little telltale sign left in Lewis's manuscripts for the Narnia Chronicles, which indicate how the last battle is indeed his Saturnine story, because Narnia is brought to an end in the last battle by the character of Father Time. And Father Time is Saturn by another name. Lewis makes this clear in the discarded image and in various parts of his academic writing. Father Time, with his scythe and his hourglass, is based on earlier pictures of Saturn, Lewis says. And it's very interesting how, when Lewis first introduces the character of Father Time, several books earlier in the Narnia series, in The Silver Chair, you may remember that Father Time is seen sleeping in the underworld cavern in The Silver Chair, and Puddleglum says, "Who's that?" And in the typescript of The Silver Chair, the answer he gets from the Earthman is, "That is the god Saturn, who will wake on the day that the world ends." That is the god Saturn. That's how Lewis had originally introduced the character of Father Time. It's there in the typescript, which you can consult in the Bodleian Library here at Oxford. But obviously, by the time Lewis came to publish The Silver Chair, he thought, let's hide this identification a little bit more carefully. Let's not make it too obvious that Father Time is the god Saturn. The Silver Chair comes out and the character is called Father Time, not the god Saturn. And obviously Lewis kept to that when he published The Last Battle. But Father Time is Saturn. There's no doubt about it. And he brings about all these bad things, these terrible tests of faith. But he also induces this one good gift, seeing Aslan with the eyes of one's heart, holding on to the divine mission that Christ himself has been given by his Father, even, you know, in the depths of misery on the cross itself. So those, I think, are some of the deeper and subtler aspects of the last battle, which I would encourage readers to focus upon.
And with that, I hope you are encouraged to read or reread The Last Battle by C.S. Lewis, and that you've enjoyed the various insights and comments by the participants today. I'm William O'Flaherty, and I appreciate you listening to my All About Jack podcast, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. All About Jack is also part of the Theology Mix podcast network. Today's show is a special feature from an occasional series I call Why Read Lewis. I do it in hopes that you will want to read more books by Lewis. Of course, most of my episodes focus on authors who have written about him. Let's not lose sight of the importance of reading him firsthand. Speaking of books, allow me to briefly remind you that I'm the author of C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, a companion and study guide to the Screwtape Letters. It's available online at Amazon and other places. Paperback is $14.99, and presently the Kindle version is just $5.49. Buying the book is a great way to help support my podcast and to keep it freely available. You can also learn more about my book by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. There you can get an immediate download of a free 20-page PDF sample of the book. Again, that's ScrewtapeCompanion.com. I mentioned at the first of the show that I would tell you more about the speakers you heard today. So in order of those voices, here are the details. Kristen Ditchfield Lazo is a popular speaker, syndicated radio host of Take It to Heart, and author of A Family Guide to Narnia, among other books. Her website is kristenditchfield.com. Dennis Beats is a co-founder of the Memphis C.S. Lewis Society. He speaks on C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien, and has published a number of articles on Lewis. Gina D'Alfonso is editor of Breakpoint.org and Dickens Blog. She is also the author of a new book for 2017 entitled One by One, Welcoming the Singles in Your Church. Dr. Holly Ordway is professor of English and a faculty in the MA in Apologetics at Houston Baptist University. Her new book for 2017 is Apologetics and the Christian Imagination, an integrated approach to defending the faith. Her website is hollyordway.com. And finally, Dr. Michael Ward is a fellow of Blackfriars Hall, University of Oxford, and professor of apologetics at Houston Baptist University. He's the author of Planet Narnia and the Narnia Code. He also recently co-edited C.S. Lewis at Poet's Corner. His website is michaelward.net. You can check the show notes for links mentioned in the show today, which is primarily individuals' website as well as books that they have out. Again, thanks for listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com.